Are you ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Joshua George and we dive into everything off page. So I guess over the past few or even past few months, we haven't really dove too deep into the link building side of niche website building. So today we go all in. We do an hour of everything to do with outreach, link building, guest posting, all Josh's processes he does with his clients and his SEO agency and what he's looking for when he's building links. He builds around 320 links per month for his clients, so he's got plenty of experience to share. And we dive into a lot of different topics around this and around, I guess, best practices for doing it, how to find the sites, identifying link farms, how to avoid them, all sorts of value for you. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right. Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today, we have Joshua George. Welcome, Joshua.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming on with your one arm there and the other arm in the sling.
Yeah.
So people will be wondering how you're getting work done, but obviously much, much slower this time. But do you want to maybe dive into a little bit of your background and introduce yourself a little bit?
Yeah. So my name's Joshua George. I run an SEO agency in London called Click Slice. That's click as a mouse, click slice as a slice of pizza. It's pretty much what I always say to people understand how we spell it and pronounce it. So yeah, I've been doing SEO since like 2016 now. It's about 6 years. So I initially got into the SEO industry as actually an end result of dropshipping on eBay. So this was prior to 2016, so 2015 times. What we used to do, we used to pretty much go onto Amazon, get the best-selling items, and then just list them on eBay. And literally when someone paid for an item with eBay, we'd go onto Amazon, order it directly to the address. So yeah, the whole dropshipping model. And, you know, that was going really, really well. Like in our peak, we had about 20,000, maybe 22,000 items up for sale, which was really good. So a lot of sales going through every day, I think between 300 and 400 a day, which sounds great, but the margins were so slim, like a pound profit, a pound 50 profit per item. And yeah, it was going really, really well. The only downside is when you sell on eBay, you have to give them a FVF, which is like a final value fee. So if you sell a steam mop for £100, right, you have to give eBay 10%, which is £10. So our eBay fees were like ridiculous. They were like thousands every month. So, you know, I was just sitting back and thinking, you know, how can I sell these products without paying eBay? And it was obviously make my own website. So I made my own website. And again, obviously no one was finding me. I had no traffic, no sales. So, you know, I did what pretty much anyone else would do. How do I get my website number one on Google? Carry out a search. Oh, it's to do with search engine optimization. And pretty much learned everything in 2015. And in 2016, started getting more aggressive with it, and you just said, you know what, I might as well offer this as a service. Like, there's a massive opportunity here, and that is kind of how I got into SEO, really. Yeah,
nice. That that eBay dropshipping is funny. I remember seeing that on, I think, Black Hat World a few years ago. I think people are still doing. I don't think they're doing it from Amazon. Yeah. I think they're still getting it from China or something like that. But have you seen people still do that? I guess to make money.
Yeah, there's actually a couple of people I know that still do it. A guy called Craig and a guy called Martin, who actually used to talk to me back in the day when I had my own eBay store, because at one point it was the biggest eBay store in the UK, which is
Oh,
absolutely
wow.
crazy. I'm just sitting in my bedroom with my Chinese takeaway, just processing all these orders. It's crazy. But yeah, I speak to like, them people that do it now, and a couple other people as well, actually. And there's money in it, but it's nowhere near as lucrative as it used to be. And there's been a lot of change in the policies, like with Amazon, that's who we use as a drop shipper, right? It's now against Amazon's terms and conditions to actually drop ship, because if you think of it from Amazon's perspective, we paid £80 for like 1 year of Amazon Prime. I think it's actually £90 now. But anyway, we give them £80 a year. And we had about like hundreds and hundreds of like different accounts, like addresses on our account. So like, we'll give
Ah, yeah.
£80, like 50 Amazon delivery drivers just to fulfill, and only getting £80 from us, like as a subscription cost. So, Amazon hates it. So they, always close your Amazon account if they see multiple addresses. So you're constantly fighting that uphill battle.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I can imagine Amazon wasn't too happy. But on the SEO agency side there, how did you get into the point to starting your own agency from, I guess, from your learnings from doing your own econ?
Yeah, so it's okay. So where I said we were doing stuff on Amazon, and then it was just like, I'm gonna make my own website, starting to rank it. And as I was learning about SEO, I kind of fell in love with it. It sounds as cliche as it sounds. I was just actually gobsmacked. You can actually control what Google shows, because as Google's the biggest search engine, right? It has the biggest market share. So if you can get your website on top of Google, you're pretty much getting free traffic, right? If you sell Steam mops and your website ranks number one for Steam mops, mate, you're not going to struggle to make money online, right? So, I know straight away, just connect in my head of just like, hey, if I understand this and I don't own a business right now, then it's going to be a no brainer to businesses. Like it's a given. The future is going more and more digital. You need to have a digital presence. No one goes on page two. It's actually less than like 1.5% of people, like based on the CTR studies. So it's just such an easy sell. Well, that's what I thought it was back in the day anyway. And yeah, so like it just seemed like the obvious thing for me to do. So yeah, that's what I wanted to do, really.
Is the typical niche website content strategy? I see a lot of e-com businesses kind of going down that road of having a blog, trying to bring traffic in organically that way. Is that kind of, I guess, is that a go-to way that most e-com stores are doing it now to bring in traffic, or can you get away with just trying to rank your product pages?
You can definitely get away with just trying to write it, just trying to rank your product pages in niches that aren't that competitive.
Okay.
It's definitely a lot harder. I know like there's a lot of people that do affiliate SEO that say you need to have, informational content and your blog posts, and you want to have your money pages. And yeah, it definitely does apply to e-com as well. Again, unless you're in a very, uncompetitive niche where you can just, literally just rank your product pages, not even your collection pages. But from what I've seen, definitely from, I'd say, February onwards, you can't really do that anymore. You need to take more of a holistic approach to SEO, and you have to see it as, although you may have a collection page selling electric bikes, right, you might just want to rank number one for electric bikes, but there's lots of other keywords like further down the funnel which convert really well. For example, like how much does an electric bike cost, the different types of electric bikes, and these are all keywords you should be targeting, not just number one because you can attract more traffic, but number two, it helps increase your TR of your website, like your topical relevance, and that is a massive thing as well. So it's funny because I always say to clients, I'm like on sales calls as well, I'm not like jumping them that often anymore, is to rank on Google, you need to have two things, right? You need to be relevant to the search term and you need to be authoritative. The authority comes from the backlinks. The relevancy comes from publishing more content on your website, which is relevant to what you're targeting. So the blog is definitely essential for sure.
Gotcha. Before we dive into the link building side, the collections page is interesting because I know there's a few e-com stores in my blogging space that have ranked their collection pages for various terms. What does it take, I guess, content-wise to rank a collection page? Do you need to have almost all the various long tails on that collection page from your products? Do you need to have all the internal links from your blog coming back to that page?
Yeah, no, that's actually a really good question. So to rank a collection page, that's mainly our primary focus when we work with e-com clients, which is like 9% the bulk of our clients now. But number one thing is you obviously want to have content on the page. It's crazy how many stores we come across that just have like a collection page selling, again, electric bikes, and they've got like 15 products on there, and that is it. Like, so you have to remember, see, Google is obviously a spider, right? It crawls the web, and it reads content to determine and understand what your page is about. If you've just got a page that says electric bikes and you've got 10 products that are electric bikes, I mean, it's yes, it's clearest about electric bikes, but it's not enough to convince them that you are 100% relevant and the best resource on the internet for electric bikes. So as soon as you add that content, which is relevant to what you're selling electric bikes, it just becomes so much more clearer to Google that, hey, this page is 100% about electric bikes. They've got the products, they've got blogs linking to it, talking about electric bikes. They've got content below the products. They've got the H1 optimized. They've got the page title optimized. There's a copy above the, do you know what I mean? It's all bang on. So our approach actually for e-commerce collection pages is optimize the page title, H1, you want H2 tags, and obviously the content, and we have the content below the product, so it doesn't actually have a big impact on the bounce rate and affect conversions.
Okay, that makes sense. And I want to dive into the link building side. Obviously, we haven't had too much link building content recently, I don't think, on the Niche Website Builders podcast. This would be good to really dive into some of your strategies and some, I guess, your thought processes behind it. We've got the dog squeaking the toy in the background there. But I wanted to start by throwing a little bit of a, I guess we could say a curveball, but recently on Twitter, I've seen, I guess, some more prominent SEOs talking about how Google can tell the difference between paid links and non-paid, I guess, organic links. I would love to hear your thoughts on I guess, that thought process.
Yeah, so I think there's two things you said about that, which is concerning, is someone in the SEO industry, people say lost stuff in the industry in general. And number two, it was on Twitter. people will always try and say what is like controversial just to get likes and retweets. But my whole thoughts on like whether Google can tell if a link is sponsored is like, there's a lot of guest posts you can get where, you know, the site will say we're going to mark this as sponsored. And that's obviously a clear giveaway. Like if I can see that in seconds, then Google can see it even quicker, right? So, you know, when we get guest post links for clients, we always want to avoid author boxes or anything like that, because it's just a blatant giveaway. You've paid to be there. And obviously you want to avoid paying for links, right? Because it's against Google's, you know, policies. Actually, getting any link, whether you pay for it or not, if you have an intent to get a link to increase your visibility of your site, that's still against the policy. So, you know, if you actually look at it from how can I build links without going against Google's policies, you actually can't, because as soon as you have that intent to build a backlink, you're doing what you shouldn't be doing. You're trying to manipulate the search results to improve your ranking. So it's quite funny. So I always say, like, when it comes to an SEO, you really do not want to be listening to Google. Like, it's not in their best interest for you to be doing SEO, because, you know, if you rank your site organically, guess what? You're not paying for ads. And that's where Google make a large, you know, a large share of their revenue, right? So going back to your question, like, whether you think Google can see this, I mean, if you do link building correctly, like the way we do it for our clients, it's pretty much impossible. Like, so it's quite funny, like our process for link building for clients, you know, at present we're building 319 or 321, like somewhere around that number, links a month for our clients, right? Back in the day, like 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, you'd find like niche relevant blogs. So if we're working with an e-com store that sells electric bikes, again, using the same example, we'd just probably type in, you know, electric bike sites that accept guest posts, and we find some. And that's what everyone does. Like, you know, you need to do a little bit more to find sites that, you know, your other competitors aren't getting links from, and the ones that don't look like links or big link farms. So what we started doing since then, actually now, is we just search for informational related keywords. And that way we know we find blogs that are 100% relevant. For example, using it, electric bike niche again, just for consistency, if we're working with an electric bike company, you know, we might Google how much do electric bikes cost, the pros and cons of electric bikes, you know, the evolution of electric bikes. And, you know, sites who are publishing this content are typically in that niche. So we really should reach out directly and say, hey, we just saw your content. I love what you said about A, Y, and Z. I also agree. Me and my family are actually very big on electric bikes. You know, we're building our own electric bike, and you know, we literally build rapport, right? We're not just saying, hey, I want to write an article for you about electric bikes. That's what everyone says. And, you know, when you're reaching out to these sites who actually publish the content and don't actively say, we accept guest posts or please write for us, you know, you're also going to be getting links that your competitors aren't getting as well. So yeah, it definitely can be avoided if you do link building correctly. And I think, I don't know why you'd want to get a link that's sponsored anyway. You're making it very clear to the users on that site that they're just paying to be there. Like, it's kind of like Google Ads, right? But in content marketing form.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to get you go a little deep on the idea of the author box and stuff. I know it might be different depending on maybe the user stuff. Because I know, for example, for me, I often post on other sites, I guess I'm just an expert in whatever my niche is. So I post, that's kind of my personal brand. That was my career before doing this online stuff. So I post and I have an author box. And I've actually been reaching out to places I'm an affiliate for, and writing expert blogs for them based on a certain topic and then getting links back with that. And then I have an author box and thing. I guess an author box at the bottom written by me, and it's just on their blog. Do you think that could become an issue then regarding being seen as a sponsor post, even though I'm not paying for the links or anything like that, but it has my name on it on another site?
Yeah, no, again, so it's another great question. So if you have 10 links or even 100 links to your site and they're all the same type of link pattern, like they have author boxes and all written by you, then yes, I think definitely it's a problem. If you just got, you know, less than five, you know, again, I don't want to say numbers because there's no magic number. Like,
yeah.
Like, what is the perfect ratio, Josh? Like, if it's just a small percentage of our backlinks that are coming that way, then don't. No, it's definitely not a problem because, you know, again, like I always say, it comes back to, you know, relevancy and authority, right? And, you know, there's also another part to that is which is pretty much just looking natural. Like, if you want to rank, you need to look natural and fit in. And, you know, guest posting in actual, the real term of how you're doing it, being an expert on the website, publishing your views and opinions and linking back to your site, that is natural. That does happen in the real world, but it doesn't happen 100% of the time. So I think
that's
where people go wrong. Because again, let's going back to what you said, what people say on Twitter, it's like, oh, you can't get any links that have author boxes. Like, no, I'm not saying that. Like, you definitely can get that, but you don't want to overdo it to the point where it's natural.
Yeah, you don't want to just have that or just have Harrow links or just have et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. And it exactly applies to guest posts as well. You don't just want to have guest post links. Although I do think they are the best links for sure. Like, I even think they're better than Harrow links. And I have my reasons, and a lot of people will disagree and say, oh, he's crazy, blah, blah, blah.
Go into those reasons because it's always interesting to hear the different theories.
Yeah, so I'm actually working with a Harrow guy at the moment. So we don't do Harrow link building for our clients. We may do in the future, but it's something I'm just testing out on our own site. And as you know, as I understand it now from a conversation I had with a guy earlier, it's like, you know, a journalist will say they're looking for ABC, and then you apply and you might send out 50 requests. And, you know, yes, you can specify the target URL you want them to link to, but they don't always link to that. And it's not always the most relevant links. And I know, when you're doing Harrow, your focus isn't on relevancy. It's about getting links from, you know, high authority sites that you can't get through guest posts. However, I always go back to, you know, number one, that isn't that natural for someone to be talking about. For example, we had a link go to our site. If you check our site in Ahrefs, you'll see it. We're linking to our e-com SEO page, which actually ranks on the first page of Google. But the content linking to us is about Google AI content, and it's nothing to do with e-com. And it links to us saying click slice. And yes, it's a branded anchor, but like, that's not relevant, man. Like, yes, I know, like, it can happen, but all other links are so bang on, like, natural. And the reason why I'm such a big fan of guest posting is if you do it correctly and get links on the right sites, yeah, they can be just as effective, if not more effective than Harrow, because you can control the content you're sending them. You control the anchor text. You can control 9 out of 10 the URL they're using. So you can get your keyword in there, get the keyword in the URL, get it in the page title, get it in the H1. You can control the H2 tag to make it more relevant to what you're talking about. Again, you control that anchor text. You can control how many links are going, how many links are coming into your site a month. You can control your link velocity that way. You can also control what page is getting a link to. Like, it just gives you more control. And some people will, you know, see all that control and go OTT again. Like, I'm going to use exact match, and that's where you go wrong. So, you know, as long as you're not doing too much and you're focused on being natural and getting links on the right sites and you have the right link velocities, it's pretty much like child's play, honestly. You just need to just be natural and do more of it.
There's a lot I want to dive into there, but first, we've done guest posts versus Harrow. What about guest posts versus just niche edits? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, again, so I've done a lot of niche edits for our own agency site. Like, when we first launched the agency and started a lot of link building, which was like 2018, 2019. And I actually played around with this a lot. So I actually ranked number one for SEO Consultant London. And I had a lot of debate internally, like, with one of the guys I worked with at the time, who I no longer work with, you know, should we just do guest posting? Should we just do niche edits? And if you just think things more like, just take your head away from this whole SEO space and just say, hey, like, how often does a website owner go into one of the old posts and update a blog and put a link in it? Like, yeah, it happens. But again, it's not that often. So I know some people say, oh, what's your percentage? Should you have 10% niche edits, 10% guest posts, and 20% whatever? Like, for me, like, the way I approach it for our site, and I mean, we don't do any niche edits for clients. It's just not that much value in it, really. Again, you know, and half the time what I find is if a site is going to accept a niche edit, you can go back to your niche edit like 4 months later and there's another link in there to a whole flipping another agency, which you don't even want to be associated with. So I think it's kind of a red flag, like the fact the site would update its existing content to include a link. That to me, that means I'll put another link in at a later date. And it has happened to me multiple times. But if I was to pick what I'd go for, it would definitely be guest posts for sure. But most people that complain about guest posting are the ones who are doing it incorrectly. Like, they're getting links on, like, you know, BMN magazine, which if you do link building in the UK, you know exactly who they are. Like, just they'll accept anything as long as you pay enough. So this is the problem, right? If you're always getting links in these same link farms and stuff like that, then you're pretty much guaranteed to go wrong. And I thought there's a lot more work with niche edits as well, because you don't know, you know, if a site will even accept a niche edit when you half the time, there's been like four instances where I'm trying to get a link to our consultant page and I've asked for a niche edit and they just say, hey, we don't do niche edits, but, you know, how about a guest post? Like, oh, I should just ask for a guest post straight away with the same money. Like, so yeah.
Nice. So with the, I guess the link farm talk you mentioned there, how can someone who's maybe getting into the space, who's looking to build links to their site, how can they easily identify what is a link farm so they can kind of avoid them?
That is a good question. So we have like a 7-step analysis process that we kind of follow when determining whether we'll get a link. And it kind of does filter out sites that are looking for link farms. I think number one is just like Number one is the first thing is how you find the website. If you are just using the standard Google search operators, which that everyone says online, or like Brian Dean back, all of that stuff, then you're just going to find the same sites as everyone else. Like, if you own a website selling, I don't know, electric or wireless mouses, whatever, right? If you're doing the same thing, the sites that accept guest posts for wireless mouses or computer accessories or gadgets, you're going to find the same sites as everyone else. So you really want to be making sure you're finding the sites differently. And the best way to do that is by using information-related keywords to the product or services that you offer. And that way, you can compile a whole narrow, literally, list of, you know, sites and prospects that you can reach out to that the majority of people won't have thought of. Because, again, I think what you realize is most SEOs are lazy. Like, they don't want to do the real graph. They just want a list of sites that are relevant and go and get a link. And, you know, that's where they actually, you know, fall into problems. So number one is actually the process of how you find the site. And once you do find a site you're happy with, we go through our 7-step analysis. The first is just making sure it's relevant to your niche. If the site is all about your niche, then that is like 100% like perfect. That's great. But 9 out of 10, you're not going to find a site that is 100% relevant. It might have to be relevant. You know, a relevant category page on the site to your niche, you know, but it needs to be relevant in one way or another. Second thing we look at is organic traffic. Again, you want to get a link from a site that is actually ranking for keywords and has traffic, because it's a good indication Google likes the site, right? If you're finding the site that is bang on relevant, but it ranks for no keywords, it has no traffic, well, then why do you want a link from that? Like, it's not passing that much value, really, even from a relevancy point of view, it doesn't rank for any keywords. The third one is just domain rating. Again, I know it's a third-party metric by Ahrefs, but it's a good number you can kind of look at, just get an indication of, you know, how authoritative is this site, because obviously DR is influenced by backlinks. You want to get a link from a site that has backlinks. So we use DR 20 and above. However, if we find a site that is like super relevant and it's DR like 15, I'm not going to ignore it. Like, I don't just go for DR 20 and above. Like, there's lots of different variables you have to consider. And if a site passes all of those three things, then we go on to the remaining four things, which is gets a bit more like technical now. It's just checking the traffic, because although a site might have organic traffic and it might be ranking for keywords, if the traffic is like, you know, on a sharp decline or has been declining over the last 4 months, you probably don't want to get a link from that site, right? Because, yeah, you know, I'm not saying the site is toxic. You know, people love to use these buzzwords, but, you know, it's not a good sign, right? You know, why is the traffic declining? Has it got penalized? Has the site been neglected? And if that is the case, you don't want that site linking to you, especially if you can control it, which you can through guest posting. Again, second thing I like to look at is the keywords. So some sites rank for a lot of keywords and get a lot of traffic. And if you just plug the URL into Ahrefs, like on the surface level, it looks absolutely amazing. But when you should go to the keywords and do a bit of analysis, you'll see like half the keywords they're ranking for are coming from a 301 redirect. And it's just like loads of made up rubbish buzzwords that have
well, search like, Disney login. And they rank like on page 10, but bring in the thousands of traffic.
Exactly. So if you look at a high level, again, you can potentially get yourself into problems, right? The third thing is just looking at what we call OBL, so outbound links. Again, you can do that very easy. We look at 5, we look at the last 2, we look at the kind of, the first 2 on the site, but if they've got 20 pages, we'll go to like page 16, page 17, and just look at what they've been doing over time. And then we look at one individual just to kind of get an idea of the outbound pattern. Again, we used to, but it just didn't add that much value. We used to create spreadsheets. They've got 10 blog posts and on average a link out. And this is honestly, like, if you're trying to scale link building, you can't do that on a granular level. You just have to kind of look at the site on the whole, look at the blogs and kind of get, I think they're linking out to too many. So yeah, that's what we do for outbound links.
Okay.
And then the kind of seventh one, which is really helping us, is looking at the site in Wayback Machine. So a lot of people don't do this, But if you just plug the site into Wayback Machine, you can pretty much see what the site, you know, was in the past. And a lot of these link farms, which is very interesting because they all follow the same pattern, is they're all built on expired domains that, you know, weren't even probably that relevant to what they are now. They just got lots of authority and have a high DR because most people, when they prospect, they just base it on DR, right? So if you can pick up an expired domain as a DR30, you know, then, you know, people will probably pay about up to $50, you know, which is a good price for a backlink from that site, right? So it's just a quick way to make money. So if you can plug these sites into Wayback Machine and see, you know, what they used to be in the past, has the site changed? Is it consistent? Have they rebranded? Have always been this way? Then that can also give you a good indication whether it's a link farm or not, or whether you want to get a link from that site. So it's quite a lot of things. Like, that's kind of the same things. But I mean, for us, it works. Like, our site ranks really high for lots of keywords. All our client sites are ranking really high as well, and everyone's absolutely happy. And I believe it's because we go, you know, this far and this detail into our link building approach.
Are there any other red flags, I guess, on a site that you're looking for? Like, if a site links out to a casino site or those kind of niches, are you like, okay, I'm completely scrapping the site? Or if it's maybe, I don't know, an ice, or maybe if it's like a sports site. I mean, a lot of sports sites kind of link out to casino anyway. Does that become an issue for you?
Yes and no. I would say it all comes down to kind of the ratio. If the site is a sports site and they're linking out to casinos in every single post, and I probably would want to avoid that. Like, why are they linking out this much? It was just one or two posts. Again, we check it by checking the blog post at random, right? So we kind of picked it up anyway. Then, yeah, I would definitely be going ahead and getting a link. But again, if the site on the whole is relevant, and I can see the traffic's climbing, it's got good stats, you know, I don't have any other red flags other than they linked out to one casino site, then I will go ahead and get that link for sure. It won't be the bulk of that client's link building profile, because again, that is unnatural, but we definitely want to acquire that link. So yeah, I mean, there's lots of like variables we have to consider. It's not just straight out for sure.
What's your take on getting multiple links from the same site? Is that something that a strategy you use? Do you lose power over time when you get more links from one site?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. So I tried to test this a while ago, but I always find whenever you have these SEO tests going on, there's always so many different variables like happening in general to know whether it was, you know, did that have an impact or not. But personally, I like to stay away from getting multiple links from the same sites. Again, it does happen in the world. It is natural. So there are some sites, even in our backlink profile, we have multiple links from them. And, you know, sometimes they link to us multiple times themselves without us even asking, which is great, right? It's free backlinks. But I don't like to focus on it too much. An amazing reason being is I like to make sure we have a lot of unique referring domains. So, you know, you obviously can get a site linked to you multiple times. It's like five backlinks, but from one referring domain. You know, I like to get as many unique referring domains as possible because, again, it's just harder for our competitors to replicate, right? If we get a link on, I don't know, backlink.com, for example, just for argument's sake, our competitor can just reach out to the same site and get the link and just say, oh, well, here, can I get another two or three? Where if we've got, you know, five backlinks all from five different referring domains, that's five different steps of outreach they have to do to replicate that. So it just makes it even harder for people to catch up with us as well.
Gotcha. And then I don't know if I missed it in your seven-step, I guess, site breakdown, but regarding the relevancy of the site, if it has multiple random categories, are you still looking at that site as a potential for backlinks because it might have a silo that is relevant to your site?
Yeah, so if a site has like 10 different categories, say it's in the tech niche, but then there's the one random niche for gardening, then we would avoid that. Gotcha. But if the site is about like different things related to gardening, like landscaping, architecture, you know, anything to do, then we'd go ahead and do that. The categories need to be somewhat related. Like, it can't just be a generic site doing everything.
So it can't be like business, lifestyle, tech, all that kind of stuff.
You know what's funny? Like, people just make those sites for money. Like, I'm guilty of it myself. I have my own site I built out just for guest posts. And I've got lifestyle, tech, I've got gaming. Like, I want to have as many categories as possible because I know people who don't look will just come out to me. And yeah, the site does well, just like 1,200, 1,500 a month, just on guest posts, and I haven't done anything to it. And, you know, a VA just publishes the content, you know, sends in the payment details. And like, so I probably should be building more, but like, I know it's not sustainable because it's the case of where the site is spread so thin. But this is what I mean. So I think the reason why I look at it like that is because I'm on the other end and I'm also doing what they're doing. So when I see something like, hey, you've done that because of money, not because your site is actually relevant to that topic, that is a no-no for me for sure.
Gotcha. I want to dive into your actual guest post, I guess, system. Because you mentioned about, obviously, you like to control the URL, control the title, control the headers, all that kind of stuff. So say you're wanting to link back to whatever page, are you writing a guest post on, or would you write a guest post on the exact same topic and then get it linked back so then it's like that's the most relevant thing you can get? Or are you kind of looking like, okay, I'm going to do something on what, what is that, or the history of electric bikes or something like that, and then getting links back from that, and then trying to control what's in the post?
Yeah, so we definitely don't write guest posts on the same keyword the page is targeting, but it's always on keywords that are relevant. So I guess to give you more context, it could be like, it could be keywords that we're targeting on the client's blog as well, because we know they're all topic blogs. So we can publish that on a, you know, an external website and get a guest post content backlink from that, then that is like bang on for us. And controlling the URL and title, honestly, like, you can get what you want if you just pay enough. And it makes a big impact, for sure. Like, if you can get your keyword in the URL and the title, page title and the H1 in an actual way that doesn't kind of compete with your target page, it's great. Like, for example, if we're trying to rank the client for best electric bikes, we can get a blog post on, you know, something like, what are the best electric bike brands on the market? Like, kind of similar to that. We get the keyword in there, but it's not actively going on with that brand. We get all the relevancy, and we say to them, we wrote the guest post content, here's the anchor text like to use, you know, this is a title, this is a H1 URL, are there any issues, let me know. If you can't post this based on what we said, please let me know in advance, because, you know, this is what the client is after. And sometimes the client says, oh, this is more than what the average person, oh, it's going to be another $5 or $10. No problem, here you go.
Yeah,
get it published.
Yeah, okay. And then this, I guess this is more geared towards the content site, builders. The idea of linking back to informational content versus your money content. Is there a pro and con for doing either way? Are you looking to link to money content ever with on the content side, or are you just looking to power up the informational side to internally link back to the, I guess, the best articles?
Yeah, again, so I think this is like where a lot of people actually go wrong with link building. And again, it just comes back to being unnatural. Like, people will only build links to the money pages because that's what makes them money, right? They get the best ROI. But the problem with that is it doesn't happen that much in the real world. Like, I mean, I'm not saying your money pages don't get links, but I mean, in terms of the way your links are distributed across the site, if you've got 20 pages on your site and, you know, 10 of them are money pages and 10 are just blog posts, for example, like, it's very unlikely that if you've got 100 links, all 100 would go to your money pages. Like, get links over time. So our approach, again, is what we do for our own agency site and our clients, is we build a link to every page on the website, because how I view it is every page on your website should have value. If it doesn't have value, why is it on your website?
Yeah.
It shouldn't be there, right? So if a page has value, then it deserves to be seen, and backlinks help increase the visibility. So all our blog posts give value to people, so we build links to them as well. We want to, you know, want to get that, we'll get the high level traffic and filter it through to our products, and all of our blog posts will link to the relevant target page as well. So we're then powering up our whole topical cluster on the whole. We're not just building links to our target pages, because you have to remember, like I said to you as well, it's all about being relevant to Google. But just because you have a page about electric bikes and 10 blog posts on about why electric bikes are the best and the evolution, the history, the pros, the cons, whatever, like, having that and internal linking is great when it's indexed. But if these pages also have authority via backlinks, you know, your relevancy now has authority in it as well. So it's like a double whammy, I guess you could say. And it's more of a holistic approach to SEO, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Hopefully that answers the question for anyone looking to power up their money pages and not just throwing a bunch of best X for Y links, exact match anchors to their money pages.
No, it's crazy. We took on a new client. I think it was towards the end of October or the start of November. It's a dentist in London. I won't name the agency. They're a massive agency in the UK, like one of the 10 awards. Not that it means you think you pay for awards in the UK, which is ridiculous. But anyway, they've won so many awards, and like, their traffic has been declining since we took them on. And like, it's been a clear pattern from before we took them on, actually, because we checked in analytics. And it's just a case of like, why is the traffic going down? And we started to do some analysis. Like, the site on the front level looks okay. Like, it doesn't seem over-optimized, under-optimized. So I started to look at the backlink profile, and the other agency, I think they built 16 or 18 links in the month prior to them, either September, October, I went to them on, and they were all linking to the same page, all had the same anchor text, and one link was actually going to the wrong page. It should have been going to the page, but they messed it up, and it's just like, who builds that many links all to the same page in 1 month? Like, the homepage had no links, the blogs had no links, all going to one page. So now, like, our team, Luca and Hike, the guys who work in the on-page department, they're literally disavowing all the links I've agency done. And I was saying to the client, look, it's like, if you get 16 links in 1 month, what are the chances of all going to the same page with the same anchor text and all getting built within the same 3 days, like 3 days between each other? It's just not natural.
So what are you doing then regarding anchor text? I know there's a lot of thoughts around, hey, you should do a ratio or a mixture of branded versus exact match versus partial versus generic to different pages. So do you want to maybe dive into how you look at doing that?
Yeah, actually, Matt Diggity has a really good post on anchor text selection. And I use the same thing that he recommends. I'm going back 2018, 2019 now. And it's pretty much reverse engineering what top ranking sites are doing. And it sounds great. And it works great to some extent. But, you know, to give you an example, again, like we ranked number one for SEO consultant London, right? So when I started building backlinks, what did I do? I looked at the top three sites, looked at all the backlinks they have on a unique domain basis, obviously per site, right? And I looked at, oh, they've got 10 backlinks, and you know, they're linking with exact match twice, partial match once, branded twice. I had all these little pie charts that I could see exactly what I needed to do. And the problem is, if you check that pie chart the following month, it's all changed. So I've got my, all right, I need 5% branded, I need 10% target, I need 3% phrase, and you check it the following month, and that 10% has gone down to like 4% because one site, it makes it really difficult. So now the approach we take is more of just a natural approach. And you definitely can over-optimize a site on internal links as well. We work with a lot of clients that we get boost just by changing some of the internal anchors in the first couple of months. But our approach is we go for 50% target match, and the rest we kind of just filter through and kind of vary up really, whether it's branded, phrase. Phrase are actually my favorite type of internal link because you get the keyword in there, but it's in a phrase and it's more natural as well. And they're definitely more natural in the real world than just, you know, your target keywords, because as you realize, a lot of these keywords that we try and rank for, half of them aren't even, they don't even make sense. Like for example, the keyword we're targeting, like I said, SEO consultant London. The keyword is SEO consultant London. Like, to get that on your page natural, how do you say, hi, are you looking for an SEO consultant London? You don't, it's an SEO consultant. Yeah. You need in, yeah, London, right? It's natural English, but way people search on Google, they don't search naturally. So, you know, I do think target matches, you know, very aggressive. And if your keyword is unnatural, which 90% of them are, unless it's a long tail keyword, it could definitely do a lot more harm than good. So yeah, we like to go for a 50% target as like the highest level, and predominantly branded. So like using like Click Slice, actual like branding, yeah, or using phrase, which is like our favorite. We do a some URL, like just putting the URL in there. But again, even when I'm reading sites online, I don't really see any URL anchors. So I always question myself, why am I using URL? It includes the keyword in it technically in the URL, but it just looks messy and spammy, so we're probably going to stop doing those as well, to be honest with you.
Do you do those branded anchors towards your informational pages as well, not just your homepage?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So we literally follow that for every single page. Like I said, going back to our whole view of like every page has value and every page has to be seen, so we build links to every page, and we want to follow the same way, just being natural, you know. Yeah, like if you have a blog post and you get links from 10 different sites, like some sites are going to link to your site, and if you want to learn more about this, click here, or read more to learn more about this e-com SEO services, or check out Click Slice, who has more information on e-com. You know, people don't link to and again, there's the whole ratio thing finds it funny, because when I was talking to new people coming to the industry, they think like, yeah, they want to fight, they need 5% exact match and 5% branded, because they don't get that, they're not going to rank. It's just like, when was the last time you've done your analysis? Oh, 6 months ago. Have you checked it recently? There's no branded there, mate. It's all gone.
So you mentioned with the internal links too. So you find this, you find the same ratio with the internal links between pages?
Okay, so on internal links, it's not really a ratio, but we always like to mix it up.
Okay.
If we are struggling to rank, that's when we'll go and actually look at, okay, well, do we have enough targets? Are we over-optimized? Because again, when it comes to internal links on blog posts, like linking from, say, a blog post to another blog post, 9 out of 10, most of the blog posts target long-tail keywords, and they actually rank pretty easily anyway, as long as you're doing your keyword research properly and structuring your content, like, you know, Market News or Surfer, for example. So yeah, it's not too much of a big thing when it's linking to a blog post. When it links to a target page, that's when we give it the kind of love and attention it deserves.
Okay, so that'd be like your collection pages and your product pages and things like that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, no, that makes sense. And I wanted to dive into some other, I guess, less common link building texts, such as things like press releases or digital PR and things like that. Is that something that you guys do, or something that you like to do at all? Do you find value in that kind of stuff?
So we don't do any PR. I actually tried, again, I'm not going to name anyone, who's a good guy, good person. I don't want to say what gender they are. You might know who it is. They're a good person. They offer like a big PR service. So I thought, do you know what? Like, we need some more like high editorial links that we can't get through guest posts, Harrow. So let's try a PR. So we tried a PR campaign. Kind of won't say the price, but it was like pretty much around the £5,000 month mark. It was one off hit of links. It was between 8 to 12 links. We got in total. And obviously the whole idea with the PR is like you create a story which people want to link to. So you force people to link to you. We've got 12 links in total. It's like 12 mentions in total. And not all the sites actually linked to us.
Oh, man.
Which is quite annoying. Like, we got mentioned in the Telegraph, which is like obviously a big newspaper here in the UK, and they said click slice. They didn't even link to us. And it's like, I mean, unlinked backlinks. They even called a backlink because it's unlinked to you. Unlinked back mentions, whatever you want to call it. People say, oh, they help. Man, that's rubbish. They don't help. they're not helping me. I've got tons on new pages that don't do anything. So it's always interesting. So like, my whole view of PR is it's good to do every now and then, but like, I don't like the fact I don't have control. Like, it's up to this journalist to say, should we link to them? Yeah, I know you can influence that. That's what these guys were doing. They were actually going to the Telegraph and saying, hey, could you link to our client? And they're gonna say no, and they did say no. Like, so our biggest links or unlinked mentions were from big sites that didn't even link to us. They just mentioned us. So it was kind of like, what am I really paying for here? Like, I don't want to talk bad about the guy. He's a nice guy. He made this very clear. I didn't have any expectation I would get these links, but yeah. It was kind of like I've spent like $5,000, and you know, out of these, you've got about six backlinks for me. Three of these already linked to us ourselves because we paid them for a guest post last year, so it's like I paid a fraction of the price. It's like I'd rather just reach out to these sites and just say, hey, like I want to get featured. Is that a possibility? I can put some money in your pocket. It's a win. Like, you know, it's all come down to a business transaction. And I think, like, if you can create a story that is that newsworthy, then yes, you can get links, but it's not, you know, your success rate isn't going to be as high as if you were just paying for them. So PR, I don't want to talk bad about it. I'm not against it. I just think the more effective strategies you can use to actually, you know, rank sites.
Gotcha. I actually wanted to go a little bit into your outreach strategy, because you've mentioned a few things that you do when you reach out or what you say in your email, but obviously cutting through the noise can be difficult. I mean, I receive stuff all the time with people looking to collaborate or, you know, guest post or whatever it is on the site. So how are you structuring your emails to get a response, really?
Yeah, so kind of goes back to the other example. So if I go back to the whole example of the electric bikes, you know, the first one is, like I said, the way we find the site is just completely different to how most people find sites anyway. So the sites I'm reaching out to, they often aren't actually getting that many requests compared to a standard site, because every site gets spammed on the internet, let's be honest. But in terms of like their ratios, it's definitely a lot less. And we always start by, you know, just saying, obviously, you start reading your post on XYZ. I totally agree with you on XYZ. But then we always put like a family personal aspect to it. I don't know why. I just find it works really well. And people are more receptive. Because like I said, if we're trying to get our electric bike client a backlink, we'll just say that me and my family are very big fans of electric bikes. Actually building ourselves one in the garage at the moment. We're having a few issues with something to, like, we get very specific. Like, they know we're not making this stuff up. And we actually understand this stuff. And yeah, we just pretty much just go on to say kind of I wouldn't say the generic thing people say, because it is kind of generic, but we have super personalization at the start. And we just say, yeah, look, you know, I've got a really good insight on electric bikes that I don't think most people have. You know, I'd love to contribute to your blog. Is that something you guys do? Kind of play dumb, like, can I contribute to your blog? Is that something you guys do? If so, like, you know, I have a couple of ideas in mind. And like, you know, people normally bullet point, like titles, we don't even do that. We just say it in a paragraph. So it seems more natural. Like, we're just trying to reach out really to another site, is also the same niche. Yeah, just send it across, and then you think it'd be a good fit. They normally reply, but like, oh, how's the build going? And we're like, yeah, it's going great. Tomorrow and whatever. And then, yeah, we just go from there. And, you know, sometimes, probably about 20% of the time, the sites don't even want payment because of the approach we've taken. But 80% of the time, the sites are still going to want payment. No matter what you say to them, how personalized, what approach you take, some sites will just want money. You know, and that is fine, because that is the industry we're working, right? It's a business transaction. You're sending them content, they're giving you a backlink.
So how are you deciding how much a guest post is worth to you based on the site? Because I'm assuming there's probably some sites that ask for outrageous money per post. So how are you deciding how much is, I guess, fair?
Fair. That's a good question. So again, it comes back to our step-by-step analysis, just looking at the keywords it ranks for, the traffic, how relevant it is, how many outbound links, is the traffic declining? Was the site, you know, used for savagery in the past, with Wayback Machine? So that kind of has a big kind of influence on it, because if you look at a high-level metric, again, of like the site is DR30, right? You know, that means I'm not going to pay any more than $80 for that link. But then, you know, that's like, that's a DR30, that's 100% relevant. Then I'll pay like $200 for that link, you know, even $300 if it's a bang on relevant link. I know we'll add value. So for us, to raise the term of the price is fair. We literally have all our links we build every month, like it's an internal Google sheet we use to track. So we just go against that and compare it, really. But ultimately, to be honest with you, as a worker with clients and they pay us a fixed amount a month, the amount they pay us dictates what we can actually allocate to link building a month. But again, if a link is so good, like there's actually one link we're trying to get for our client. I won't name the site, but yeah, they're coming back, you know, for a guest post link. It's about 1600 plus VAT. And it's just like,
oh my gosh,
for one link. Like the site's not even that relevant. It's just authoritative. So it's like, is it really worth it? Probably not. So yeah, we're just leaving it. But again, I think the more outreach you do and like the bigger your database is, because let's be honest, everyone says, oh, we do outreach, we don't work from a database. So you're like, if you do outreach enough, you're going to naturally have a database. Like, I don't care. Like, so when you have a database, you can always see, what links you've got up there, how much you've paid. And often when you get a link from the same site, like a different client, if they're in the same niche, you'll always get a better price on the second link as well.
You mentioned about the $1,600 guest post. I know obviously the Parasite SEO, a lot of those sites charge like $5,000 plus for a sponsored post. Is that something that you've ever, I guess, used or considered or find valuable as a link?
I think in stuff like that, when it comes to Parasite SEO, where anyone can acquire those links, I think the only thing that makes it more like, oh, I want to go for that, as backwards as it sounds, is the price of it. The more expensive it is, the harder it is for the guys competing with me to replicate that, right? If it's like 50 quid, I won't even bother, because someone else could just get that straight away. But I mean, it's a bit backwards of what I just said, but it's something that we don't do at all for ourselves or clients, just because, again, I like to have full control over it, and I like to know this is a site I've actually found because it ranks for keywords, and it's not just a random, you know, site on like Tumblr where you just publish a post or whatever. And a lot of links are actually no follow on these sites as well, by the way. So yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of things to consider. But to answer your question, like I said, it's backwards, but if it's a good site and it's authoritative, it's not relevant and it's quite expensive, I will go ahead and pay that money, because I know someone can't replicate that. And that may give me the further edge if we're all equal on, you know, all the aspects, like the other backlinks, the on-page, the keywords and stuff like that.
Do you have any tips then for getting links on like massive authoritative sites, things like Forbes or whatever else? Are there ways to go about doing that? Or is that kind of like how you just need to know the right people?
Yeah, honestly, I would love to say like spend time on LinkedIn grafting, messaging journalists, and yeah, it does work. But like, I always look at it as just time versus ROI, and 9 times out of 10, unfortunately, especially in the SEO industry, money does talk, and you know, you do need to just spend what you need to spend to get these links, and you have to see it as like, because I was actually trying to get one of our clients mentioned in entrepreneur.com. I've actually got featured in there, and I was talking to the lady who actually manages. So again, I don't even know the journalist. Like she has a connection. She obviously pays for it as well and adds a markup on me. That's fine. That's her business. I'm not involved in that. If I think it's a good ROI for me or my client, we'll still pay it, which is what we're doing for our latest e-com client. And yeah, she said to me like, yeah, it's going to be this amount. I think like three grand, something like that, or $2,500. It's thousands, pretty much what it is. And even then, there's no guarantee to get it because they have a long wait list. So even though these sites are charging like $2,000-$3,000 a link, there's loads of people paying that. So then if you see it as like, hey, I'm going to try hit up Sam on LinkedIn, I know he works for the entrepreneur, and ask him if he wants me to send him, I don't know, some Krispy Kremes to his office. And it might be, you can do that. But unfortunately, if that guy pays $2,000, Sam can buy like 100 boxes of Krispy Kremes or way more than that. So like, I mean, I'd love to give you a tip, but honestly, I think that's probably been the biggest lesson for me. Like I always thought that I could spend more time building relationships and get stuff for free. And you can, but it's going to take you like 10 times as long to actually like action the stuff you're trying to do. And that's going to mean 10 times longer to get results, and 10 times longer to generate leads, and 10 times longer to make money, and 10 times longer to the developers. It's just, honestly, my best advice was like, just pay the money. And I know, again, I know it's not that helpful. But to give you context, when I quit my job, I was struggling to pay the money, and I went back to my other job and my old job and actually contracted for 4 months just to get enough money to get this stuff featured in place. And it just kind of fast tracked my whole success. And my
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. I want to touch on as well before we finish. You mentioned about nofollow links as well. So obviously, do follow, nofollow. When you're getting guest posts, you're getting do follow links. But what's your take on nofollow links? Are they necessary? Do you need them? Are they useful? Can you do anything to help, I don't know, power them up?
Yeah, so nofollow links on the whole, I mean, they definitely do play some role because, again, it's a natural type of link to get. Like, you shouldn't have 100 backlinks and 100 of them do follow. That is unnatural. Some sites will naturally just link out to you with a nofollow, especially on the bigger sites, right? I've actually paid a lot of money. I think it was about 1,800 plus VAT for a backlink, which was nofollow. Like, that's much I can't believe in them. However, if that was a do follow, I would have been happy to pay $5,000 for that link. So I wouldn't pay as much for a no follow link, but I think it's good to have. I only think it's worth getting them from sites that have tons and tons of authority. So I wouldn't be getting a no follow link from like a DR5 of like 50 users. Like, there's no value in that. So I would say, like, when it comes to getting a backlink, like, again, it needs to give me one or two things, either relevancy or trust, like one or the other. And if it's no relevancy, then it needs to give me authority, right? So it needs to come from a big domain. I know some people say, well, you're not getting any authority because it's actually a, you know, a no follow backlink, but it's still a premium prestigious site that doesn't link out to any other site. So again, I just always look at it as like, when you need to go the extra mile and you're struggling, getting those no follow backlinks from high quality sites, you know, can often make the difference.
Yeah, I know Charles Float talked about no follow links months ago on this podcast, and I know you know Charles, and he mentioned about nofollow links being a hint to Google, and that you can send links to your nofollow links to essentially help pass juicer. Is that something that you ever do, or part of your process?
Yeah, I mean, it's something I've done on that nofollow link I was just talking about. Like, just give it a bit more power, right? Because it's obviously the site doesn't pass me any link juice, but it does pass me some trust, right? That's also another element people forget to think about and always overlook. Because again, if you get a link from, I don't know, the BBC, right? Like, that has tons of trust to Google. Like, it's an actual news agency in the UK. Yeah. Like, it's British. It's there, right? So if you can get a link from that, it might not give me a ranking boost, but you know, there's a lot of trust coming. But then I can then power it up and get a bit of link juice coming from it, from my tier two links. So yeah, that is definitely something I have done. I don't do it that often because I hate building links to things I don't own. Like, you spend this money building guest post links or niche edits or whatever it is to, you know, this tier two property that you don't own, that page should get taken down. Or like, I like building links to things I own. I have full control and I own the asset. That gives me a bit more, you know, a bit more reassurance when I sleep better at night. Because I built a lot of links, a lot of tier two links when I first got into the SEO, like with PBNs and stuff like that. And then pages get taken down. It's like, I've just spent like £200. on the tier two link on like every different target page just linking to me. It's just like, I've just wasted like 4K. Like, what have I done? Well, nothing to show for it.
Fair enough. I guess the last question I have is, if someone is looking to do a link building campaign or get links, how can they measure what's working? Is there, I don't know, is there something that you, because obviously there's so many factors involved with your pages ranking, things like that. Maybe you're getting multiple links. How do you know if that specific link was something that helped you?
Yeah, so I think for us, like, when we see like our clients, you know, rank trackers that we use through like agency analytics, it's often quite clear to see. So normally what happens when you build a backlink, so people think, oh, I build a backlink, I get the benefit straight away. You don't get the benefit until it's actually indexed anyway. And as long as you're building backlinks on good sites, you know, the post should be getting indexed within a week, like I would say at max. Like, if the site's not getting indexed, that new page isn't getting indexed in a week, then, you know, the site's not getting crawled enough, which means there's no reason for Google to crawl that site, which means it's not active enough. So again, it all comes back to following that, you know, 7-step checklist, making sure they're putting out, you know, lots of blog content, they've got keywords ranking and stuff like that. But pretty much what you can do to kind of like track things is build links to multiple pages and track keywords on a page level, right? That's pretty much what we do. So when we plug in a keyword for a client, you track it on a page level through agency analytics. And you often see like very, very clear, like you built 6 links in this month. The page has been stagnant for the last 6 months. All of a sudden, you know, that page has increased in rankings. And we've only published 2 blog posts that have been linked back to it, but we built backlinks to that page. So like, there's nothing else it can be. Like, it's not just a case if you've seen it a one-off. It's like, oh, it must be a fluke. Like, we see this consistently across all our client sites. And at the moment, we're making this video, we work with 28 clients. And, you know, these are the clear patterns we see. And you also see rankings increase on blogs as well. Like I said, we build links to our client blogs and our own blogs, and you see those go up in rankings as well. And if you want to like check it on a more granular level, you could always go into your Google Search Console and just check how many impressions your page is getting, because often what happens is you're only tracking like the main parent, the parent keyword. There'll be lots of other long tail keywords that page is appearing for, but if you're not tracking, you don't actually know. But when you just check the impressions on a page in your Google Search Console, you can see your impressions going up over time. And if you're only building backlinks to that page, because 9 times out of 10, once you've got your content on your category page or collection page, whatever you want to call it, you don't really do that many optimizations to that page. It's just link building to the blogs and that page. So it's the only real outside external factor that you have an impact on that is making the impressions go up.
Gotcha. No, that's a good piece of advice for anyone looking to track some of their link building campaigns. But I think that's all the questions I had, Joshua. If people want to find you, follow you, see what you're up to and things like that, where can they do that?
Yeah, best place to be on Twitter as _JoshuaSEO.
Perfect. Easy as then. All right. Thanks for coming on, though. I really appreciate you sharing a lot of the link building tips.
No worries. Thanks, James. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.